Hello out there to all my lit lovers and word warriors. I'm your host, K.E. Robinson, and you're kicking it with me in the author spot, the hottest spot for the reader in you. If you're an author looking to tell your story or a reader looking for the next great one to dive into, join us at theauthorspot.com for books, reviews, and other great tools.
Lit lovers and word warriors, I want to welcome you to the 63rd episode of the Author Spot podcast. Three seasons in, over 60 episodes in. In between some of these things, we've dealt with some fantasy, we've dealt with some reality, we've dealt with a little bit of both. Today, I'm going to bring you back to reality a little bit with a hard truth. Four simple words, something that we have to acknowledge, but we hardly ever do, no matter what it is. And that simple truth is, we can do better. One person who holds true to that and is going to make sure that we stick to that is my author today, Miss D. Jomo, as she talks about her book, We Can Do Better, setting the pace for the next generation. So, Miss Jomo, we want them to purchase your books, but first let them buy into you. Welcoming to the Author Spot, Miss D. Jomo.
Thank you very much. My name is D. Jomo, like you introduced, and I am the author of We Can Do Better, setting the pace for the next generation. Just like the name implies, it highlights some of my takeaways from the pandemic, including how the pandemic was an education with lessons we can leverage on to solve many underlying problems in our communities. Some of these problems, as I mentioned in my book, were created specifically by the pandemic, and others had been here all along, with most people giving them very little consideration or effort to find a solution. We Can Do Better was born out of my constant curiosity and search for the meaning of our existence in this world. This curiosity began and intensified after the death of my mother, seeing how we slowly began to learn to survive and live every single day without her. Slowly days went by, months went by, and years went by, and life continues. And the idea of one being here today and gone tomorrow and the world continues like they weren't even here had me perplexed and in a confused state for quite some time. If we have no control over when we arrive in this world and when we die, then there is more to our existence. That's always been my thought. Every day around the world, people die and every day a child is born. It's like a circle and we cannot pretend or ignore the fragile nature of our life. We must remember that our stay in this world is temporary and do the needful to pass on to the next generation by setting the pace of what is expected by our actions and what we do around the younger generation. And when I mean needful, I mean leaving the world a better place for the next generation, doing what we can to change and fix problems that could have long-lasting negative effects on the next generation. We all have a role to play, and we could begin by looking around our communities to identify problems, and then make a list of solutions in order of complex to less complex, and then start from what we can control. One thing that I ask myself is, what is within my control? And I think that's a question that we should all ask ourselves. If I can't solve it, who can? And if you can't solve it, who can solve it? Do you know someone who can? I started writing We Can Do Better at the beginning of the pandemic. I would say the second week of the stay-at-home order. And I must say that I did not set out to write a book or become a published author. I have a background in film, and then I transitioned to computer science and engineering. So the only thing that I thought that I'll be writing was either a script or a programming code. But watching new stories of heroic acts and seeing how we collectively fought the pandemic was my eureka moment. Suddenly, I felt like I had found an answer to my curiosity and search for the true meaning of our community. And I began to ask myself so many questions, one of which was, do we have to wait for the pandemic to do these things? Things like food and grocery delivery for the elderly. People were making masks and giving out for free, and there was a willingness to truly help one another and to fight the pandemic. This is what community is about, I said to myself when I started writing. We Can Do Better was written with an intention to provoke deep thought and action to do better. As you read along, I ask questions that require you to pause and examine yourself to answer those questions as well. I provide answers to the questions from my point of view and leaving it open to you to answer the questions in your own point of view. There's no one way to the solutions. There's no quick fix to our problems. We must all take actions to contribute as much as we can. One example that I mention in my book is how we care for the elderly. During the pandemic, people aged 65 and up were considered to be more vulnerable. And this age group are considered vulnerable to some extent, pandemic or not. According to the US Census report, the population of people 65 and over reached about 55.8 million and making 16.8% of the population in 2020. And then I saw another article from the World Health Organization that was published October 1st, 2022. It's titled Aging and Health. In 2020, the number of people ages 60 years and older outnumbered children younger than 5 years old. And by 2050, the world's population of people aged 60 years and older would double, be about 2.1 billion. The number of persons aged 80 years and older is expected to triple. So now, having this in mind, how can we be more prepared to support seniors in near future? Mind you, we're all going to age. So in my book, I mentioned things like when we build our homes, having in mind that we're all going to get to that point where we age. I mean, having homes that have wheelchair access, knowing that at some point, you're not going to be able to climb the stairs by yourself anymore. And then I leave it open for everyone to read and for readers to answer the questions and probably contribute to their own ideas of what they think they can do to support this aging population. Clearly, we're all going to get to that point. Another thing that I hold on 1 second. Again, I leave this open for readers to come up with their own ideas of how we can better prepare for the aging population. It's the idea that the birth rate, we have a very low birth rate. So it means that the younger people, babies born, the number of aging population is higher than the number of children born today, like number of infants in the world. And so we're all getting to the point where you're going to have people that are 65 and older are going to be more than the younger generation at some point. And so what are we doing I've been to homes where they don't even have a wheelchair access. Like, you have to climb the stairs. And I'm like, do you even consider the fact that one day you're not going to be able to climb the stairs? A lot of seniors have to move into the senior homes because they don't have accessibility in their homes. So at some point, when it gets maybe 70 or 80, not everyone, I know quite a few 70 or 80 year olds that are very healthy and strong and can run up the stairs, but there are people who can. And then they'll have to move into senior facilities because their homes don't have wheelchair access or it's not, senior friendly. And I feel like if they do put that into consideration from the start, and build homes that are accessible, even if you're 40 or 35 or 20, you're buying a home, having in mind that at some point, you're probably not going to be able to climb the stairs. And I feel like if we have more homes like that, then we wouldn't have seniors having to give up their homes to a senior facility because they can't do things themselves at home.
And a lot of that is, and it's a problem that we see kind of anything. As humans, we're more reactive than proactive. Like, we'd rather deal with something after it happens as opposed to before it happens. Mm-hmm. Prime example, let's go back to the pandemic and how people were then utilizing technology to do their jobs. I think a lot of that caused some argument that showed, hey, I don't have to be in the office 40 hours a week to get my job done because you found a way for me to do it from home. And I think that became a problem in some areas for people going back to work.
Yeah,
I know some areas that were not back full in the office even last year. That were fully in the office before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that in a way that the pandemic kind of exposed jobs for their ability to not to have you in the office 40 hours a week in order to get the job done?
Yeah, absolutely. There are jobs that, I know people that wanted to work from home before the pandemic and couldn't. And then all of a sudden there's a pandemic now and it's like 1 year out of the pandemic and they're still working from home. And so, yeah, the pandemic did have that effect on jobs, even though I know that a few companies are trying to get people back to the office. But it's going to be difficult because a lot of people have gotten more comfortable working from home. And I mean, it does also work out for, like I said, people too who can commute every single day. It gives people access to get jobs. It makes more jobs available for people. Yeah, the pandemic had effect on that, huge effect on remote jobs. I think it's going to remain this way for a while because I don't see people, companies are probably considering the cost effect on going, you know, having to rent an office building and then having people work at home. And so sometimes that system kind of works out for the startup companies, the tech startup companies, that they don't have to rent office spaces anymore. They can just start their businesses at home as remote work. So, yeah, it did have that effect on. But coming back to what you said earlier on, like you said something about, you know, we're proactive, you know, and that's what happens. It's history has always shown that we are like that as human beings, you know. We wait till there's something going on before we take action. And it's always that reluctance to actually help out someone who's next door. I mean, who would tell that people would actually just volunteer to go deliver food for people, for seniors at home? It wasn't that way before. But at the peak of the pandemic, people were jumping out of their homes and, you know, driving to volunteer food banks to volunteer. And that was great. But it was also sad because at the end of the pandemic, a lot of food banks saw a huge shortage of volunteers. People went back home. A lot of people stopped volunteering. And that was the reason, one of the reasons for we can do better is we don't have to. Why do you have to wait until this is happening for you to go volunteer at a food bank? You know, why do you have to wait for a pandemic for you to knock on your neighbor's door and say, hey, I'm going down the street? Because during the pandemic, I had a neighbor that would ask me, hey, I'm going to the store. Do you need something? You know, so why do we have to wait for a pandemic to do that? It should be something that we do on a regular basis where we do care for. We look around our society and we look at those that are vulnerable people that, you know, we look at the minority groups and we look at people that are at disadvantage. And yeah, so we have to be proactive all the time, not when there's a pandemic or something happening.
No, and I completely agree. And I was actually going to circumvent back to that somehow when we talk about how we are in the emotion and doing certain things because the emotion is still there, how we feel about it and deal with it. One prime example, when we talk about the pandemic, I also think of 9/11, when everybody was so united and we had the freedom fries and we did all these symbolic things for a little while. And then, you know, we're all tied together. And then as time goes on, we start getting further apart from what happened. So when you talk about setting the pace for the next generation, we're talking about habits. So we're taking from the emotional of just acting in the emotion for the moment. How do we start making this more habitual in how we care for one another?
Yeah, one thing that I mentioned in my book, which is also a call to action, is the idea of having a collective mindset in an individualistic society, because we live in an individualistic society. We live in a society where the focus is often to improve oneself. You know, a society that encourages independence and freedom of action, and which is great. You know, but there seemed to be a sudden switch to collectivism during the pandemic. We had a collective goal to beat the pandemic. So this simply shows us that we can solve majority of our problems that exist in our communities and the world in general if we work together. You know, but the problem, like you say, is often that we seem to push things away if they don't affect us directly. You know, and so one of the questions that I ask in this chapter of the book is, how can we create a more caring, individualistic mindset? We're not saying, hey, you shouldn't be individualistic, or we want a collective society, because, I mean, that doesn't work out. I mean, it's almost like saying we want communism. That's not what we want. We want, it's great to have an individualistic mindset. It's great that we have an individualistic society where people are able to make independent decisions. But how can we have that society and yet have a more caring mindset where we can easily put ourselves aside and say, hey, you know what? I want this right now. I want all of this, but someone needs a little bit of it. I can share. I can give this. I can once in a while take myself out of the whole, you know, it doesn't have to be all about me all the time. You know, how about the next person? And we seem to forget that at some point, it kind of affects all of us. So what happened during the pandemic? You know, so we had at the beginning of the pandemic, first, we had a lot of, it affected minority groups a lot. A lot of the minority groups, people that had low income and people without healthcare, you know, without insurance. And a lot of people that were affected were people in that community. And what a lot of people realized at that time is how important it is for you to care about people in that community, because it does affect all of us. So COVID made it very clear that if I have COVID, right, it doesn't matter whether you have $1 million in your account. If you come close to me, you're going to get infected. So it's not about the money anymore. It's the idea that your money doesn't really matter. We are the same individual. We're human beings. You know, I'm going to die from COVID. You're also going to die from COVID, whether you have $1 million in your account or not. And so that's one of the things that we have to remember is if you keep stepping over, we have a lot of homeless people on the street and you keep stepping all, you know, over them over and over again. So I live in San Francisco and we have a homeless issue in San Francisco. At the beginning of the pandemic, which was great, they got a hotel for every homeless person on the street, because they did realize that with this homeless people on the street, it's going to be hard to beat the pandemic. Because if I'm going to keep walking by this homeless people on the street, if they get COVID, I'm going to get COVID. And so the whole population is going to get infected. And so it gets to the point where we have to remember that as much as we can just stay comfortable in our homes and have everything that we want without any need at all, there also we have to consider the people out there. Because at some point, we're all the same. Like I said, the pandemic is just a clear indicator that it had no respecter of anyone at all. I mean, even presidents and governors and senators were getting the same COVID that every single person on the street was getting. The pandemic is a call to action for everyone to remember who we are. We are one body. We are the same. We have the same blood running through our bloodstreams. We are the same people. I mean, we could be separated by education or wealth. By the end of the day, it still boils down to you are still going to lay down on the same hospital bed and you're still going to depend on the respirator to keep you alive, just like the homeless guy on the street. So it doesn't make you different. And so we have to consider that, put everyone into consideration from the start.
And I say part of that is just respect for the other person. When I say that because we don't have the pandemic right now of COVID, but it's still out there. People are still getting it. And so, you know, there's so much that goes on with people, you know, being upset with people wearing their mask, whereas mm-hmm. I get it. I mean, you talk about, you know, there's a shot. You talk about the most effective thing is the mask. I don't know why it's such a problem for people to see other people with their mask on, knowing that this is the only, the truest source of protection, in my opinion, from it. Because no one wants to be out of work 5, 10, 15 days stuck by themselves in a room. Mm-hmm. Yet we can't respect each other's differences enough. And that's what a lot of this comes down to, in my opinion.
Yeah.
As far as caring for others, we talk about individualistic versus
collectivism.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The difference is respect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when you live in an individualistic society, that's what happens is, well, I can choose not to wear a mask. I don't have to, because that's what happens in that society is I'm thinking of myself. It's about me. It's about my improvement. I'm thinking about me. This doesn't work for me, so I don't care if it works for you. But like I said, I think that we did great knowing that being that we're coming from an individualistic society, and then we got to the point where, I mean, I feel like at some point, the majority of people were wearing masks. And I saw videos on Instagram and on social media in general where people were literally walking. If you come into the store without a mask, they'll walk you out. You can't get services. So at some, it got to that point. So I think that we kind of did a great job being that we are an individualistic society. You can't force anyone to, you can't take anyone to the hospital to get a COVID shirt. You can't do that. But in a collectivist society, that's what happens. It's a communism, right? It's compulsory. You don't have a choice. And so there's a pros and cons to that. And the pros to being in the society where we live is you have the opportunity to grow. So it does have a huge pro. You have an opportunity to, you know, have an opinion. You can own a property. You know, you can actually work for yourself and say, hey, you know, I worked hard for 20 years and now I can buy a house. But that doesn't happen in the collective society. My take is, don't necessarily have to be a collective society, but we should know when to adapt a collective mindset. You should know that, hey, everyone is dying right now. It's not about me. It's not about me right now. I have someone who's 65 next door. I have to wear my mask when I walk by his door. It's not about you. Nobody cares about you right now. So yeah, we have to get to that point where we just knowing when to adapt and not be selfish about yourself, be considerate about other people. And I think we all have it in us to do that. We can all do that. It's our nature for us to, I mean, that's why it was very easy for us to become, you know, people were literally making masks and giving out. People were on the street giving out hand sanitizers, and people were, like I said, delivering food and all of that. So that's because it's our nature. It's because we're born, we have that nature in us. It's easy for us to bring it out if we want to. And that's the goal of we can do better is reminding us that inside of us, we have this true nature to care for one another. And we easily just push it away because I'm not going to die. I don't care. I don't have cancer. So why should I care about who has cancer? You know, so, but this is a pandemic. Okay. This point, how do I get it? You don't know. You can just walk past someone and then you get COVID. So now you're worried about, oh, I need to make a mask for my next door neighbor. So in between all of this, you know, is the idea that you're making a mask for your next door neighbor. You're giving a mask out to people, but you're doing it because you want to keep yourself safe. You know, so that we can do better is saying, you know, you did that at that point. That was great, but we can continue like this. We can continue in this true nature that who we are in saying, whether the pandemic is happening or not, I want to be deliberate about what I'm doing, how I'm able to help, or what impact I'm making in my environment, in my community in general.
So in a way, working with others is still helping ourselves. In a way,
yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's like I said, we all the same. I mean, we're all one. So in my book, I clearly state, you know, I make a very clear difference of how we come to being from that individual point of view to saying at the point where we decide to adapt a collective mindset. And oftentimes is when we feel that our life is in danger. It's always that. In history itself, in general, it's been like that. We had the Spanish flu, you know, and then we also had, you know, when you look at history and look at all the pandemic or some kind of epidemic going on, that's always a time when people come to work together because they're afraid they're going to get affected. So it's always a selfish interest of saying, you know, I'm going to make a mask and share it to everyone because I don't want them to give me COVID. I don't want to get COVID. So somewhere deep down, it's a very great gesture, but you're doing it because you don't want someone else to get you infected. But what I'm saying, and we can do better, is that's great. This is who we are. Can we continue to be that person who truly cares about our neighbor? You're not giving your neighbor a mask or an extra jacket because you don't want to fall sick. Or because you don't want to get infected. You're doing it truly because you truly care about your neighbor. And one of the things that happens when we do neglect the minority group, when we do neglect those that are not as advantaged as we are, is having this pandemic that comes into a community and is being spread, you know, across very quickly because we have people who are not well equipped to be able to fight these diseases. Like for instance, well, during the pandemic, a lot of people were able to work from home, but most of the minority groups were not able to work from home. A lot of these people work in the warehouse, they work at the grocery stores. Most of them are janitors, and most of them they live with their entire families at home. You know, they don't have the luxury of having individual rooms. You know, they're not able to afford big homes to accommodate every member of the family or give everybody the luxury to have a room of your own. And so now you have people who are coming back home with COVID and getting every single member of the family infected with COVID. Keeps spreading across the community like this. Goes back, you know, it just becomes a circle. But if we have a community where everyone has enough. When it's a pandemic, people could have can afford to stay back home. Or if I can, I mean, if you can afford a 5-bedroom house for every member of your family, if I come back home and I tell you, hey, you know what, I think I have COVID, you're probably going to say, lock yourself in your room. Don't come to the living room. We're going to bring your food to your room. We'll drop your food in front of your door. But if you're sharing a 1-bedroom apartment within 5 people, it's just not possible. Everyone is going to get infected. And so creating a community that people are able to afford good housing and being able to afford, you know, at least the basics of life, you know, to be able to have a bed and not, you know, sharing 1-bedroom apartment within 5 people. That's what a lot of people live like that. And the majority of our society live like that. Not just, it's not just 1% or 2%. And a lot of people live in homes where, you know, you go into the home, it's a 1-bedroom house, and they have like 6 people living in that home. And so it's you know, having ahead of, planning ahead of time to provide, to make, to balance out what we have going on, where there's a huge disparity within those that are poor and rich. You know, so closing that gap is very, very crucial. And that's part of what We Can Do Better is about. It's not about just one fix. That's why I did mention saying it's not just one fix. It's a lot of what the problems that we have, we're probably going to spend some time solving it. The most important thing is having in mind that the willingness to solve these problems, the willingness to solve it. If we do have the willingness to sit down and have a conversation to solve these problems, we're going to solve the problems. The problems are going to be solved. You know, and, you know, at the end of my book, I did mention, focused more on why we have to focus on the younger generation. And part of what we have to do with the younger generation, and when I mean younger, I mean kids who are probably between the ages of 0 to probably 10 years old or 5 years old, is actually starting from now to, you know, teach them about who they are and letting them know that just because you're from this racial group doesn't make you better than the other person from this racial group. Being able to take your child who's living in this beautiful neighborhood, a beautiful park, being able to take that child to another neighborhood where you have minority kids and having him, you know, play with those kids is very crucial for us to start that from a very young age. And we can fix, the only way to fix most of the problems that we have, because I keep this generation, the boomers, the millennials, the Zs, we're all one after the other, we're going to leave. We're going to leave. And if we don't start from the younger generation coming up, then we just have a problem that continues around in a circle. You know, we have people who are very ignorant and people who feel privileged and a lot of people who don't even know why they are or why they have what they have or why they think the way they think because they've been programmed to think that way. So it's actually a problem. We have to have a root discussion where we're a grassroots discussion where we're discussing those problems and, you know, finding solutions. And that's going to happen if we all agree to do it, just like we all decided that we're going to fight the pandemic together. That's the same way that we can all come together and say, okay, we're ready to solve these problems. And how do we do it? We don't have to wait for the government to do that. I mean, we individuals can just set up groups where, you know, discuss these problems. How do you solve this? How do we, we have this problem in our community. How do we solve it? What do we do in our little tiny space? You know, what do we do to be inclusive of everyone? How do we include the Black and Brown communities? How do we include the Asian communities? How do we include, you know, people of different ethnic groups, you know? And this is not all only, this is not the only problem that's happening in the United States. This is something that's happening all over the world. You know, everywhere you go in the world, there's just this minority group that is suffering. Can't even afford to have 3 square meals a day. There's always a minority group that is looked down on. A lot of countries go through that. The reason why the United States have this people, it's just because it's on the news. We talk about it every day. But there are places where I think it's just the human nature where we kind of feel comfortable seeing other people go through pain or torture or the idea of knowing that, oh, yeah, I'm wealthy and I have more than you. It's just something of ego and pride. But that's not how we're programmed and that's not who we're supposed to be. And so the only way we can solve most of the problems that we have in a society is actually, you know, having that discussion and saying, these are the problems that we have. How can we solve it? And focusing on the younger children, you know, tracing back our steps to where we got it wrong and making sure that we don't transfer that same mindset to the younger kids that are growing up now, the kids that are going to be 5 years old and 10 years old going to high school. We don't want them to be programmed the same way. Otherwise, we're just going to have a circle repetition of the same things going on and on and on. Yeah, so that's the whole concept of we can do better.
And knowing that, right, knowing that you come toward the end and you talk about influencing the younger generation, do you have anything that follows? Maybe it's another book of a different kind, or maybe it's right along the same, something along the same lines as We Can Do Better, setting the pace for the younger generation. Do you have anything to follow it?
And so what I do plan for, so like I said, you know, I didn't plan or set out to be an author, or this was an inspiration, you know, that started, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic. And so what I do intend to do is to see how this pan out and be, I'm going to, you know, have, you know, workshops, different cities, and, you know, bring people together to talk and see how, where everybody's mind is at. And then, yes, I would probably have a next We Can Do Better, the second edition, or we can, yeah, just, but first, I don't want to be too, because I did not, you know, I didn't set out to, like I said, I didn't set out to be an author or to publish. My intention was to make a difference or to be able to provoke thought and action. That's basically it. And so because that was my intention, I don't want to rush into writing the second series saying, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to make sure that We Can Do Better actually gets in the hand of the right people, and that we are able to dialogue, have conversations, you know, discuss, you know, mistakes and solutions and way to move forward. And then from how these workshops that I intend to start beginning of next month, depending on how they go and when I feel the fulfillment or like we're actually heading to the next step, there's a progress, then another book is probably going to follow after that.
And that sounds pretty good, right? Because it's not just about the books. Like we say, it's more than manuscripts when you come over here. And you're definitely, Ms. Jomo, about more than just manuscripts. You've got a goal here, something you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
So for anybody who's trying to get the book, right, or maybe they just want to get in step with you about, you know, setting the pace for the next generation, or if they want to hear about these workshops you're doing, where would they find the book? Where would they find you?
We Can Do Better is available on Amazon and will be available in Barnes & Noble and bookstores near you in the next coming weeks. So it's going to be pretty much accessible to anyone that wants to buy it. Yeah. And then it's also on Kindle. You can get an e-version on Kindle as well. A lot of people prefer to read on their phones and tablet these days. So yeah, it's pretty, very easy to get in to read with Kindle.
And what if they wanted to contact you, where could you be reached or found?
So I have an Instagram account. Though I'm not really very active on Instagram, but I do intend to become more active as this workshop series that I mentioned begin. Also, I do have, right now it's just Instagram, and I'm trying to see how, like I said, I want to be intentional about every action that I take concerning this book so that it fulfills its purpose. And so, yeah, I'm online. It's going to be on Instagram. That's the best place to find me right now. And Instagram. That's the best place.
Fair enough. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. And then you can Google, if you just Google We Can Do Better as well, it will just take you to different links. It takes you to Amazon. And then I think on Amazon, you have an author page. I also have a website. You can reach me through So the website, for people who are not on Instagram or social media, you can reach me on my website. So the website is wecandobetter.net. I have a contact page. And if you fill out a contact page, it comes to my mailbox straight up. Yeah, so the website is the best place to reach me if you're not on social media.
That's key. Given that, is there anything that you would like to, any last thing that you would like to say to just anyone out there, whether it's younger generation, older generation, just listeners in general, other authors, anything that you would like to say to anybody before we leave?
You know, I do want to say that we have to be very intentional about our lives and our actions, knowing that it's very temporary. And because it is very temporary, we need to take actions that will be beneficial to the next generation, and not just selfish actions. We need to also welcome dialogue and conversations to discuss past mistakes, solutions, and possible ways forward. Every single one of us, every single one of us knows someone who's not, within the same, social circle, who is not, as wealthy as we are, or who's going through something. And so it's reach out to that person that you know, even if you're not able to help out, being able to at least being that voice, and that ear that they can actually listen to. Be very observant in your communities to make an impact in your community. Wherever you live, my mom used to say something to me, and she would say to me, she said, wherever you find yourself is your home. One time my mom had a government job that moved around a lot. And so wherever she moved to, whatever city she moved to, she would get a big house, like a four-bedroom. I'm like, you're only here for how many months? And she said to me, she said, because you don't know when you're going to leave this world, wherever you go, wherever you find yourself, make it your home. And what she meant by making it your home was not just for you to have a big house, but also to be involved in your communities, to know your next door neighbor, to know what is required of your community, to be a voice. Because you were not born there, or because you're not a counselor, or you're not a governor, does not mean you should close your eyes to things that are going wrong. You don't actually have to be the one that's going to create a change, but you can actually pick up and make an impact by actually finding someone who could actually impact the change themselves. So that would be my last word to everyone in this interview who's listening, is to say, make an impact in your community. Look at what's going on around you that's not right. What needs to change? What is it around you that you don't like? What is happening around you that you don't like? What can you do to change that thing that is happening around you that you don't like? We all have a voice. We all can do something. Don't ever think that you cannot do something to change something that doesn't seem right that's happening around you. That'll be my last word.
And we appreciate you for that, Ms. Jomo. That's definitely something that we got to take and run with, right? Reach one, teach one, right? The habits that we carry forward should go beyond, but it's got to be consistent. It's got to be consistent. So, Lit Lovers and Word Warriors, we're going to thank Ms. Jomo for coming on and joining us once again with her message. Hope that you really listened to what we had today. It's been another Hotspot episode. You guys just wait and see who we put on the spot next time.
If you're an author looking to tell your story, or a reader looking for the next great one to dive into, join us at theauthorspot.com for books, reviews, and other great tools.